The Best of Our Knowledge explores topics on learning, education, and research. Coming up, we'll speak with a scientist who helped pinpoint a unique and long-theorized form of matter, and we'll visit a museum in upstate New York that organizers hope will inspire the next generation of firefighters. I'm Lucas Willard, host of The Best of Our Knowledge. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. A global team of scientists has pinpointed a new form of ice. Well, not exactly what you put in your glass. For decades, quantum spin ice was a theorized form of matter. The discovery could have major impacts in fields like quantum computing. Rice University physicist Pengcheng Dai helped lead the team that has discovered this form of matter that exists at the electron level near absolute zero temperatures. I spoke with Dr. Dai to learn more.
So classical physics, we typically, you know, speak about this, that the, you know, laws of motion, like, you know, Newton's law, right? You know, when a system, you know, moves, you will have a particular velocity and particular, you know, a mass. And when it hits something, it will stop or it will bounce back, right? And in the case of quantum physics, it's quite different. Quantum physics only occurs in materials where, you know, the electrons are extremely light. Not only they're extremely light, they actually have a spin of a half, not very large spin. You know, spin is extremely small. Smaller spin, for example, electron would have a spin of a half. And in this case, there's a lot of a so-called quantum fluctuation, or what typically people call, you know, fluctuating fluctuations due to quantum motion. For example, you would naively think, you know, a typical material, when you gradually cool down, the vibration of a material will become less and less, right? But eventually, the question is, what actually happens at zero temperature, the absolute zero temperature? In the classical world, you should expect, you know, atom will cease to move, right, at zero temperature. But that's not what quantum mechanics tells us. In quantum physics, even at absolute zero temperature, the atoms are still moving. So that's actually the key analog. Basically means that it still has a lot of motions that are basically disallowed, you know, in classical, you know, physics, but only occurs in quantum world. And this is analogous as saying that let me give you, you know, another example. You know, let's simply think about, you know, when you have two slits on a wall, right? If you shoot a machine gun on the wall with two slits, you should expect the bullet only goes through the walls, right? And then you have two, you know, imprint on the other side of the wall, right? And that's purely classical physics, right? But if you now think about the shooting the particle as a quantum particle, spin of a half quantum particle, and your pattern after the two slit will no longer be, you know, only occurring the intensity at the two slit position, you should expect to see, you know, modulation of intensities, or you'd expect to see, you know, photons or electrons at a position. You know, you cannot draw a straight line, you know, from you know, where your gun is and where your after the screen. So this is so-called the wave nature of electrons, even at the absolute zero temperature.
So what you're saying is that in quantum spin ice, in this concept, that even at the coldest temperatures, at absolute zero, at the tiny electron level, there's still the ability for electrons to have wiggle room, to basically be moving. They're not frozen in place.
Yes.
So
In this case, go ahead.
So I'm just curious as to understand, you know, why is this valuable to understanding that even at the coldest temperatures, even at absolute zero, that there is still movement at the tiniest of levels?
Yes, this is exceedingly important because, first of all, it doesn't occur in classical physics. And second of all, it's exceedingly important in the sense that, you know, it basically tells that the quantum mechanics is important. And this is particularly also important because of quantum computation. Because quantum computation in you know, different from analog of, you know, classical computation, you have basically 1, 0, 0, 1, right? These are the two only possibilities. But in quantum physics, you can have, just like I gave you the earlier example of, you know, wave passing through a two slit, you can have so-called ambiguous state. So this was the concept of quantum spin, you know, liquid was, you know, coined like 50 years ago by a giant, Philip Anderson. What he proposed back in 1970, you know, was basically saying that, you know, any material, when you eventually go to low temperature, you either will order in one way or the other. But what Philip Anderson, you know, suggested is that you can have a, you know, a electronic state or spin state of a system in which there are many fold, there are many possibilities to form the spin state, and yet there's no long range order. What he's basically saying is that you can have a potentially a quantum state from which you have many potential possibilities. They're all equal in energy, but then, you know, they can interfere, they can correlate, but they do not have, you know, do not exhibit static long range order. And this is particularly important, you know, for the, you know, quantum computation, because in the case of quantum computation, you can increase the speed, you know, of computing by many, many orders of magnitude. And this is actually, you know, one of the hot pursuits in modern, you know, in modern physics and in modern technology.
So I wanted to talk about your work and your team's work actually confirm a material that behaves as a quantum spin ice, this special type of material.
Yeah, it's called a paracol.
So tell me about your team's research and why you went out to actually confirm the presence of this material and how it behaves as a quantum spin ice.
Yeah, this is the so-called emerging, you know, photon scattering. And like I said earlier, you know, the ice is something we understand, you know, with many sort of a degenerate state with, you know, the hydrogen between two, you know, in and two out. And in analog with, you know, water, you have this called, you know, when you put each of the tetrahedral side, for example, in a paracol lattice, and we put a spin on the tetrahedral side. And the spin, you know, because a spin is nothing but, you know, north and south pole, right? You can essentially think about it, you know, north-south pole, basically a simple magnet. You know, just like the stuff you put on your refrigerator, right? You have a north and south pole. And when you put each of the spin, for example, a quantum spin, which has a, you know, spin of a half on a lattice that that's sort of a tetrahedron, meaning has a four corners. And that basically means that spins can either go in and go out, completely analogous to you know, hydrogen, go in, go out. And in the classical spin ice, and this problem was solved like 20 years ago. And then the, you know, classical spin ice will be spin ice in which the moment is exceedingly large. There's no quantum effect. But about 25 years ago, a theorist have predicted if quantum effect were to be important, then a key signature, in addition to the regular physics, would be this so-called emerging, you know, emerging photon. And this emerging photon, basically it's a photon is what we know is sort of a light, right? It's called a light, you know, a photon would have a dispersion of, you know, linear dispersion. Basically, the speed of light is proportional, you know, with energy is proportional to the speed of light, which has a linear dispersion. But this emerging photon is basically a signal coming from a magnetic signal, basically coming spin fluctuations. And the spin fluctuation in most material would not behave like, you know, sort of with its linear slope. Well, this emerging photon, because it follows a particular theoretical framework, and it's purely derived coming from purely quantum effect, and would have this emerging photon, which has a linear dispersion at zero energy. And this hypothesis was there for 25 years, and we have, you know, be the first group to have detected this, you know, basically confirming that this particular material is very much behaving like a quantum spin ice instead of a classical spin ice. Thus, you know, suggesting this compound is really potentially be the first sort of a candidate or strong candidate for a quantum spin liquid.
So tell me about this actual compound and what is the name of the compound? And yeah, is it difficult to come by? Is it not an easy to find compound, or does it only exist at a very specific...
It's a man-made compound. It doesn't exist in the... It's a man-made compound. It's basically... It's purely sort of driven up a man-made compound in the sense that it's a cerium, it's a rare earth, and zirconium is sort of a non-magnetic material, and then oxygen is typically, you know, sort of oxygen, that's what we breathe, right? So this particular compound has a crystal structure, so-called a paracore structure. And this is the same, you know, structure where the classical spin ice have been, you know, discovered. And you know, for example, you probably heard a concept called a monopole, right?
Well, I have not, but could you explain it to me?
Yeah, monopole, basically, you know, when we say we have, you know, a sort of a magnet would have a, you know, north and south pole, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the charge, you know, charge would have, you know, you have a charge, you have an electron that carries a negative charge, right? You have a proton that carries a positive charge, right? And these two things can be completely separated, right? You have electrons running around in solid. And whereas you can have a positive charge, you know, that completely, you know, running around as well, right? I mean, in most solid, it's sort of fixed about. But what's actually special about, you know, magnet is that, you know, south and north pole are always connected. Always one side is north and one side is the south pole. So in this case of a classical, in the case of a classical, you know, a spin ice, you can have a situation in which when the spins flip within the solid, it almost behaves like you can have a, you know, a monopole, meaning the pole only behaves like a north or only behaves like a south. So that's why, you know, the classical spin ice is exceedingly interesting. But then, you know, what we have done is basically to put that into an analog, you know, introducing the quantum effect, and therefore, you know, to prove that this particular material much, you know, more behaving like a quantum version of a spin ice. And that's why it is called quantum spin ice.
You're listening to The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Pengcheng Dai. Dr. Dai is a Rice University physicist, and he led a global team of researchers to pinpoint a unique, elusive, and long-theorized form of matter called quantum spin ice. The discovery could have significant applications in advanced fields like quantum computing.
In analog computing, you only have one and zero, right? When the problem becomes complicated, the time it will take to get the results out will be astronomical. You know, we only live, you know, in a finite time, right? Everybody, you know, I mean, 100 years out of the limit. And if some computation, you know, would cost like 3,000 years, you're just not going to do it, right? So the potential advances with quantum computing is that you can shorten the time, you know, from, you know, 100 years to potentially, you know, minutes. And in terms of getting the same result, and basically using the feature from which the particles in a quantum computer are actually entangled, meaning that they know each other, and yet, you know, they can behave in a much more quantum way, so that you can get, you know, much more rapid, you know, access of, you know, the information. And from, you know, purely sort of an intellectual perspective, just having a material, as Philip Anderson said, you know, more than 50 years ago, that would have a quantum state, that you know, entanglement of a quantum state has no Lagrange order. It's basically a new form of matter that's not known before. Let me give you an example. You know, we all know superconductors are very useful, right? You know, do you know what is a superconductor?
Can you explain it to me?
Yeah, superconductor is a material when you cool below a particular temperature, form a new quantum state with no resistance. If you have a superconductor and that can behave at room temperature, then there will be no, you know, heat when you pass current through it. That basically means the power plant, when they transmit a current from the power plant to your home, will not cost, you know, energy at all. And it's just like when you try to jump up your car, right? You can see when you jump up your car in winter times, and then the cable will have a huge current, it'll warm up, right? And all this warm-up energy is lost. And superconductor is in the quantum state in which all the atoms, you know, behave, you know, simultaneously. And then when they transmit electrons in such a fashion, it does not cost any energy. And quantum spin liquid is a quantum state from which, you know, you behave collectively as one thing, yet the entanglement, you know, make it to be a completely new state of matter. And that's why people are so much interested in it.
Now, where will your research take you next? Where does this study, what direction does this study point you in of what needs further study? What are you interested in studying further?
Yeah, so I mean, Of course, the field of quantum spin liquid has been going on, for, 50 years, right? And we physicists try to really digest the problem, from all angles. Basically, we're trying to ask the question, are there any other alternative potential interpretations of this phenomena that we see, except, to see whether, this is really a genuine new state of matter. So this particular, study we did, point to the possibility that this is really a quantum, a spin liquid, a quantum spin ice candidate, or a quantum spin ice. But as this material, as in any other solid material, there's always a little bit disorder. In our case, it's like 3 to 4%, disorder. And the question is whether such a small amount of disorder, can, induces the effect that we see, experimentally. So in the coming month and years, we'll do all kinds of tests, and we can apply an external magnetic field and try to see how this magnetic photon scattering would change as a function of field. And then theory has a particular prediction, and we'll try to see whether their predictions are correct. And then we'll also try to make samples which are much less disorder and try to really confine to absolute zero temperature. Of course, we can never go to absolute zero temperature. So far, we can go down to like 20, 30 millikelvin, and we can potentially go to 10 millikelvin and try to see, whether, such a state would still exist. And then we can try to disturb it. And by using a different ways of perturbing it, we can compare the experiment with theoretical predictions. And from those, we can basically, to really make a complete picture to see whether this material is really long thought quantum spin liquid or quantum spin ice that has been predicted 50 years ago, has never been totally confirmed by any experiments.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say about this research or the sponsors that made it possible?
Yeah, we would really appreciate the support from Department of Energy and Basic Energy Sciences to sponsor and support this work. And without their support, this work, none of this is actually possible.
Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to explain it to me.
Yeah.
And best of luck in your continued research. Thank you so much again.
Yes. Thank you very much for interest in our work.
Dr. Pengcheng Dai is a Rice University physicist. His team's research on quantum spin ice is published in the journal Nature Physics. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. Next segment, we travel to upstate New York. In the rural community of Greenwich, a century-old building houses generations of firefighting memorabilia that some local residents are hoping can help inspire the next generation of volunteer firefighters. WAMC's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Aaron Shello-Levine reports.
Originally built in 1904, the two-story brick building that once served as Greenwich's jail, in addition to its volunteer firehouse, now stands frozen in time. This time of year, the rough-and-ready building also stands literally frozen. And while the community recently crowdsourced nearly $40,000 to replace the decaying windows in the old firehouse, there's still no central heating, or central anything, for that matter.
I'm sorry, 4 or 3 feet from the kitchen sink is the toilet. I can't prepare my food and get rid of it in the same room.
Gary St. Mary has been a volunteer firefighter for nearly 5 decades. His father before him was a firefighter, and now his son is a firefighter. He's among a handful of community members vying to turn the building into a full-blown museum, in part to help inspire young visitors to join the long lineage of volunteer firefighters serving the Washington County Village.
It's beautiful. The condition that it was in, it needed some love. We gave it some love. But as far as structural, we haven't done anything to change the structure of the building or layout. It's all the way it was originally.
The 2B Museum already has an impressive collection of vintage firefighting equipment, from hand-pulled hose carts to buckets with their bottoms rounded out as an early theft prevention method. Most striking, however, is the intact hand-pumped fire engine.
And you got to remember, this unit always went to the water source, whether it was a stream, a pond, the river, whatever. And then the guys on these hose carts would hook up, run to the fire, get the nozzles on the hoses, send a runner back to say, okay, you can start pumping. And then, if they didn't have enough guys yet, what they'd do is they'd pump up, pump down, and step down. So hopefully by the time they got to the other end of this thing, there was a line back here to give you a break. If not, you got right back in line and got pumping again. That's how these guys all had those barrel chests. They didn't have to go to the gym to work out back then.
Greg Dorisky is president of the Rough and Ready Engine and Hose Company No. 2. The organization working to conserve the building, which was a working fire station until the mid-1900s. Volunteer firefighters currently work out of a station half a mile down the road. The 28-foot-long engine weighs in at 4,700 pounds and was purchased by the Rough and Ready Engine Company in 1899 for $800. Large brakes on each side allowed for up to 60 men to pump it at once. Picture a massive seesaw. And an extension of rope off the front allowed as many people as possible to help pull it. A giant brass orb sits in the middle. St. Mary explains its purpose.
The big brass ball on the top is if you have a modern well at your house, 10 to 1 you have what they call a pressure tank. And that is basically what that big brass ball is. The water would come in the bottom of it, try to compress the air in the top of it, and it would smooth out the stream of water because it's a positive displacement pump. It's a piston pump, and a piston will spurt water. When the piston pushes, it spurts the water, and then there's a lull in between the other piston pushing. Trying to compress the air in the bulb smooths it out so it's less spurting.
The engine was refitted in 1926 for competition and, in its prime, sent a 1-inch stream of water 232 feet. The building's first floor also hosts a variety of antique firefighter toys and early fire extinguishers. Visitors can scan QR codes to be sent to the museum's YouTube page for in-depth explanations. There is also a selection of alarms, including a giant triangle. And if you look closely, you'll see a line of rope running up through the first and second floors to the roof, where, back in the day, it could be pulled to ring a bell. And yes, they kept the bell too. The second floor has two pianos, marching band instruments, and was where firefighters held dances and concerts. It's also where volunteers have on display a variety of items belonging to the village's chapter of the Independent Order of Oddfellows. Think a more peculiar Elks, Masons, or Knights of Columbus.
Their purpose was to protect the widows and orphans, to bury the dead, to help each other in want, to counsel each other in difficult.
There's a vast collection of Oddfellow memorabilia, including a casket with a model skeleton named George that St. Mary and Dorisky found under a staircase when they opened up the firehouse in 2020.
They were a faith-based organization. The Independent Order of Oddfellows, their insignia was three chain links: faith, love, and truth. Okay? And they protected and educated the orphans and, unwanted children. They, back in the 1800s, this really surprised me reading through their records, they provided a home for the aged, okay? And in the 1800s, they had sick pay.
Dorisky tells WAMC they're working through the process to become a registered 501c3, and they're finalists for the current round of New York Forward funds, which the state has set aside to help revitalize smaller and rural communities.
And we've put in for a bathroom, handicap bathroom, water, sewer, a new power panel, heating and air conditioning, and a stair chair, a lift chair to get people up and down the stairs. So if we get any money at all, that's what our projects are. And then depending on what New York State deems we're worthy of receiving, we'll go from there.
St. Mary's got high hopes for the building and the prospects of turning it into a proper museum. Mostly, though, he just likes sharing the village's firefighting history.
Well, volunteer fireman age is 16 in New York State. 18 before you can go interior and actually fight fire. But, yeah, I would enjoy educating the younger generations, whether it be school students or college students or just Joe off the street.
Dariski says when they're open regularly during the summers, they can get up to 15 visitors a day. With the planned improvements, he expects that number to keep growing.
People should care because this is firefighting history. Any firefighter, once it's in their blood, they're going to die being a firefighter. That's just the way it is. And when we're out to the Washington County Fair, we have a lot of other firemen that come from other departments that, again, we didn't know it was here. We didn't know this stuff existed, all that kind of stuff.
Reporting for the Southern Adirondack Bureau on the campus of Skidmore College, I'm Aaron Shello-Levine for WAMC News.
If you'd like to tell the best of our knowledge what you think, send us an email at knowledge@wamc.org. You can listen to the best of our knowledge anytime as a podcast, downloadable wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to catch up on past episodes or hear more WAMC National Productions programs on the news, academic study, books, women's issues, the media, and the environment, visit wamcpodcasts.org. This has been The Best of Our Knowledge, episode 1838. The Best of Our Knowledge is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Thanks to associate producer Madeline Reynolds. The latest on all national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter and our flagship station's website, wamc.org. Until next time, I'm Lucas Willard.